Thank you for joining us today at Mormon Stories. A few quick reminders. If you're interested in attending either of our August 4th Sunstone workshops, the morning session focusing on navigating an LDS faith crisis in or out of the church, and the afternoon session focusing on navigating a marriage when one of you loses their testimony, please email us today. Space will be limited. Second, if you are interested in joining the private Mormon Stories Internet web forum, where you can meet and discuss Mormonism in privacy with others like you, please send me an email via Facebook to let me know of your interest. And finally, if you value what we're doing here at Mormon Stories and want to keep this program alive past July 2010, please consider signing up today to become a monthly paid subscriber to Mormon Stories. All donations are tax deductible. They will go directly to the time and materials used to produce the show. And you can sign up for as little as $5 a month at mormonstories.org. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to another edition of Mormon Stories Podcast. My name is John DeLynn, and I'm very excited to have with me one of my favorite couples on the entire planet, Dan and Lori Gallagher. Dan and Lori, welcome to Mormon Stories.
Hey, John. Thanks for having us.
Hey.
Hey, guys. Well, just to give the listening audience a little bit of a background, we have covered a bit what happens in a marriage when one member of a couple loses their faith. And some of you may have listened to a past episode with a woman named Jackie, a dear friend, who talked about her marriage when her husband, Eric, lost his faith. And today we're going to turn the gender tables a little bit, and we're going to talk about the situation in reverse. In this case, with Dan and Lori, it is Lori who lost her faith in the LDS Church as an impetus to a bunch of series of changes that they ended up having to make and adjustments to their marriage. And so that's going to be the topic today. Dan is a journalist and a mighty fine one, I'll add. That's his profession. And Lori is she owns a yoga studio, and she's a yoga instructor and a yogi. Is that right, Lori?
That's right.
Yeah. So just giving them a little bit of background, we'll probably get into some of that in short order. But let us begin, if it's okay, with Dan. Dan, we'll begin with you. And I would love to hear a little bit about your early experiences in the LDS Church, a little bit about your parents, and a little bit about some highlights that sort of typify what the church meant to you growing up.
Sure, no problem. And often I'll preface, because it's going to be listeners may get thrown for a loop when they hear our respective stories. I always consider Lori a far more faithful and spiritual person than I am even today, even though it's not rooted no longer in the LDS Church. But okay, so to start at the beginning, I was my parents were both. My father was a non-member until I was a teenager. I was about 14 when he started the discussions, around 15 when he joined, and when we got sealed in the temple later that year. My mother was more or less raised in the church, grew up in central Utah until she moved to California when she was a teenager, and was sort of semi-active. And my early childhood years, I would kind of classify as sort of as more of a semi-active participant. You know, we would go some Sundays and not some Sundays. And I'm the youngest of three. And so the church was always this, it was this kind of good influence in my life, but it wasn't an overpowering culture, you know, mindset in the home, I would say. At least the way I've compared it to some other LDS families that I've known. So it was very different from that regard. You know, I went through it. I went through it in high school, you know, it wasn't until high school that I actually had some friends at school in the church. I had no Mormon friends all the way up into high school, that I went to school with. I served a mission. I went to Brigham Young University for a year, then served a mission, then came back, And so I kind of went through the milestones, and I think what I developed was, you know, before a mission, I kind of had the sense that, you know, the LDS Church is a good place, but I didn't really have what I would consider any kind of testimony or real much of a strong belief in the specific doctrines. It was just to me like, you know, a good place that taught people to make good choices, smart choices, you know, clean living. And that appealed to me. I had many friends that you know, just made a lot of mistakes with a lot of things. So, you know, that sort of influence appealed to me, and I thought it was very helpful. But I think the biggest influence as I look back was, you know, watching my father go through the conversion process. And he, it was interesting because it's not like he turned from a bad person to a good person. He was a great dad before, great person before, but he had this additional kind of light to his character that you know, his personality changed. He became this, you know, what I thought to me was a happier person, and my parents became much closer. And it was this, to me, it was a very transformative experience in my family that really influenced me as I was considering, you know, okay, do I go on a mission or not? Do I really believe this or not? I really think it was that experience and watching it that's told me to take a leap of faith on this whole Mormon thing, to put it that way.
And tell a little bit about your experience with your seminary teacher, the 1 year that you had to take lessons by yourself. I thought that was interesting as well.
That is. So we, you know, the stake I grew up in Northern California area, east of Sacramento. And we had a, you know, seminary typically been done by, you know, member volunteers, but we had a full-time CS teacher move into the area to basically run the seminary program for the stake. And he was a really great, individual. One of these guys that, you know, I've had a lot of influences in my life through Mormonism, and some very unorthodox types of Mormons and some very orthodox. He was somebody I consider like, you know, just a very straight and true believing, full believing Mormon, but was the best example of what that is. You know, a very kind, to me, a non-judgmental person, and very knowledgeable. And my junior year, I was playing football, and my schedule just didn't allow me to do any of the regularly scheduled classes because I had weight training in the morning, practice in the afternoon. And so I had an open final period, and he said, hey, I'll come up, and you meet me at the – we had class in this basement of a house next to my school, and he said, I'll come up and meet you. I'll come up an hour early before the regular class, and I'll teach you. So it was actually just a semester, not the entire year, but – for this semester, seminary was simply me and him. And that would sound probably kind of freaky to a lot of people. I was wondering myself going into it. I thought, okay, because I didn't know him at all before this.
Right.
And he was, it was a great experience. I had, you know, I don't remember retaining a lot of like specific doctrinal knowledge out of that. What impressed me was this guy was such a, you know, before that, you know, I had always thought of people that were so into the church as a little bit kind of off, I guess, I know that sounds a little rude.
Sure,
but,
sure.
You know, I kind of thought, you know, too churchy a little bit. He was somebody that I thought, okay, wow, that guy, you know, Mormonism really works for this guy. You know, I respected him a great deal. And, you know, again, it was like, you know, when I think of influences of Mormonism in my life, especially my young life, it was more about people that influenced me than, you know, hearing a specific teaching or doctrine that I connected with. It was these people that made me think, wow, there's something to this whole thing. And you know, that was definitely very influential.
So just to kind of summarize it, it feels like the church had a powerfully positive, transformative effect on your immediate family and on your father. And then you just had some wonderful experiences of regular Salts of the Earth saints just being good people and doing good service and charity and love and emulating happiness. And that was sort of the foundational bedrock of your of your commitment to the church into your adulthood. Is that right?
Very much. And, you know, it was funny because when I, and to show you where my deficit was, when I ended up on, when I got out on a mission, you know, I'm sitting there in the MTC and I realized I didn't know hardly anything about church doctrines. You know, I knew the relative basics. I had gone through primary, I'd gone through the youth, you know, and listened to the classes and, you know, seminary, you know, to be frank, I spent most of seminary checking out girls, including mm-hmm. the one I ended up marrying here. but, you know, I could have said like the very basics. Yeah, Joseph Smith had this vision and, you know, but it was like, it was amazing how much I really did not know.
Right.
And went out on a mission with really a complete lack of knowledge. And so, you know, I kind of tried to give myself a crash course in the mission field, you know, trying to understand what are the doctrines, what are the history, do I really believe this, or not, or try, you know, that's kind of a bad time to do that, you would say, but because of, I think the great experiences I'd had up to that point, you know, essentially, you know, were the strong thing leading me through it. You know, when I come across like maybe something historical I didn't quite understand or had a question about or a doctrine that I wasn't quite, you know, keen on or whatever, I kind of defaulted back to, you know, well, this religion has worked so great for so many people close to me. Let's work through it. Let's give it a shot here.
Sure. Well, great. All right, Dan. Well, thanks for giving us that background. Laurie, if it's all right, let's turn to you now. Tell us a little bit about your, you know, formative church experiences, what the church didn't mean to you in your, you know, childhood and youth, some of the main themes or stories that come to mind.
I think that my church or my upbringing was really similar to a lot of Mormons. It's probably in many ways, it's that story of being raised in this really warm, loving family. My father's family has Mormon roots going way back, you know, pioneer days. And my mom was a convert. So, and she was an only child. So she converted as a teenager. And I think most of her upbringing with us was that she wanted to provide us with all of that warmth and coziness that she never had in her family. And so that's what I experienced. I have three sisters, and we were all close in age. And I can't imagine having a childhood without the church. It was so interwoven into our childhood experience. Even though I was the only kid that went to my elementary school that was Mormon, besides my sisters.
Right.
But we had so many young families with kids our ages, and it seemed like that was extended family.
Right.
So we were in California, but we had tons of non-member friends. But when we needed something, when we really wanted to spend a holiday with someone, we were hanging out with all of our church friends.
Right.
So, you know, I relate a lot of the things that I can pinpoint now back to the church. You know, my parents, they said prayers with us every night. And we always had that constant conversation going on about saying prayers when we were upset and how the Lord works. And my mom was really spiritual. So she was always sharing stories with us. She taught us, I think mostly just underlying everything we were taught was the idea that we follow Christ and that there was this expectation of ultimate kindness. You know, we were expected to be kind to our sisters and everybody around us. But I got the traditional stuff. I got the, my mom stayed home, and so I would come home to fresh baked bread, that kind of thing. Yeah. My mom taught us to sew. We had matching dresses for every holiday that my mom would make. My dad had a matching tie. Yeah. So it was really cultural. I had a lot of cultural.
Okay, wait, so his tie matched your dresses?
Yes. His tie would match our dresses. And my poor sister, the joke was that four girls, then we'd pass the dresses down. So my poor sister at the end had to wear the same dress for 8 years. So, poor thing. But yeah, so that was it. That was I just can't separate a lot of my good feelings from childhood from church memories, activities that we had at the chapel, and all of the friends, all the sleepovers, all of the holidays we spent with them. And then as a teenager, as I started to grow up and change, I started babysitting a lot. I was a really popular babysitter. And so I was all constantly going into LDS homes and seeing different situations. Now, my dad was also a piano tuner, and he would arrange a schedule. So when I was growing up, he was often home in the afternoon. So I had two parents at home for much of the time. And my dad was this guy who would wash dishes if they needed to be washed and change diapers. And I didn't get this role delineation.
Right.
So when I would go into other people's homes, I was pretty shocked by what I saw. And I started to get this, like, feminist awakening. And I started to get really frustrated with some of the teachings of the church. I was really fascinated with pulling it apart and discovering what was doctrine and what was culture.
Right.
And I and that's a trick for a teenager, because I really was curious about all other religions and wanted to explore. And as a kid, and especially as a teenager, I had an overwhelming desire to know God. I wanted to know. And as a child, I just remember thinking, if Joseph can pray and God will appear to him and Jesus will appear to him, you know, I can do the same thing. I actually remember being afraid to pray because I didn't know if I really wanted, you know, angels appearing in my bedroom.
Right.
So, and then when I did pray for it, you know, I was shocked it didn't happen. I must not be praying right, you know. But as a teenager, that continued to grow, and I just was really exploring things. I even remember arguing with Dan on the phone as a teenager, you know, about culture and doctrine and all of those things. But I had huge questions.
Which I can answer none of.
Yeah. And I remember being asked to bear my testimony as a teenager. I must have been 16 or 17. One of the spur-of-the-moment things, the bishop called on a few teenagers to come up at the end of the meeting. And I went up, and I didn't quite know how to share it, but I just said, I don't know if the church is true. I don't know if the Book of Mormon's true. I don't know if Joseph was a prophet. And I bore my testimony of Jesus and of his teachings, and then I sat down. And there's a part of me that just doesn't know how to not be honest, you know? I don't know how to fake it in a situation like that. So I got some good feedback from that, as far as people were very accepting of it. So so that's it. And somewhere in those teenage years, I was 15, right, Dan, when we met?
16.
I was 15. You were 16. And we met at a dance festival. So that brings us up to the meeting.
Okay, okay. And so Lori, from your perspective, wonderful church experience, dance festivals, youth conferences, temple trips, and all that stuff, good experiences with the church overall, but some emerging questions about gender equality and a sense of empowerment about getting your own spiritual confirmations about things?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. So, Dan, you had a good mission and you came home, and what happened next?
Well, what happened next is Laurie was there off the plane when I walked off.
Oh, Laurie.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I said is, I'll marry the first girl I see when I walk off. And unfortunately, that was my mother. So I had to break that. I had to go with the second, but... I'm kind of joking. We had it was funny. We had dated when we were teenagers, broke up. I had been with somebody else in college, and but just on the mission, we'd written a little bit, kept in touch, and then near the end started writing more.
Right.
And as when I came back, I honestly didn't get off the plane expecting to strike up a relationship with her. like that, I had thought, I wonder, you know, I had to question, I wonder what it'd be like to date her again and everything. And, but, you know, we kind of, you know, we just kind of started, I think our first date was actually just to go see a mutual friend who had gotten married while I was away. And, you know, we realized how, my memory of it is that one time we just realized how incredibly comfortable we were with each other, mm-hmm. And how much we knew each other. And it was so comforting at the time that it was like, it almost wasn't like a real date. It was like being home, mm-hmm. you know, like coming home to something. And right. It was, you know, it was disconcerting at first. I thought, wow, this shouldn't be happening to me so soon. I had no plans to get, I didn't come off a mission thinking, oh, I want to get married really quick.
Right.
It was just this amazing, peaceful, comforting feeling. And of course, being an RM, you're thinking, oh yeah, this is like the spirit, you know, saying, but I, you know, I didn't, to be honest, I was never the type, even at my most believing time, I was never the type of Mormon that really thought to get like, try to get God's approval on everything. So right. It's not like I thought, oh, this is a spirit telling me I need to marry her or anything like that. But I was just trying to pay attention to what I was feeling about it. And maybe Laurie had a different view. I don't know.
And Dan, if you had to describe just in, you know, 30 seconds, like bullet points of how you saw your life advancing once you got married to Laurie, as it related to the church, you know, what would be the milestones that you envisioned and the type of LDS life you saw sharing with Laurie?
Well,
just bullets, not, you know, just
sure.
High level.
I never, you know, my mission taught me, I had an interesting mission experience and it was a really good one, but it's, you know, it was challenging in a lot of ways too. And it taught me some important lessons that, you know, and one of the lessons I thought that I learned from it was I felt that when people base too much of their life on the church, you know, the way I have to say it was, I felt when people got too into the church and too imbalanced, it led to unhappiness. So I came home and I always had this notion of trying to have a balanced relationship with the church, you know, live, worthy to have a temple recommend, of course, you know, live those main rules. But I never wanted the church to be this overwhelming, complete, you know, suffocating influence. Right. I wanted it to be like I remembered growing up. Like, right. You know, it's a good thing that's there. I didn't care about what positions I would have or Laurie would have. You know, I just envisioned that we'd be happy, you know, being involved with the church and in our ward community. And, you know, I always had kind of a liberal approach to it. I didn't envision, much else really.
But were you invested in the idea of a celestial marriage, of an eternal marriage, of raising your kids with strong testimonies, you know, and did you have conceptions about her working outside the home and that kind of thing?
Well, you know, on the last one, absolutely none, because before Laurie and I ever dated, her notion of flirting with me was to tell me how much she expected her husband when she married to let her have a, that she's going to have a job and be working and her husband's going to be okay with that.
Wow, Laurie, you're a progressive.
Yeah.
She made it clear up front.
Okay.
So she weeded that out. I wasn't, and I wasn't really looking for that. It was, you know, what I wanted was, I wanted us both to be devoted to each other. I wanted us to be devoted to our family. And what I figured is that if we had that devotion and love and put each other first and family first, that we would together make the right decisions, you know, in terms of working and career. So if that, you know, and I kind of defaulted, I never had any experience with kids. And so I never thought for a second that we'd have a reverse situation and I'd stay home and take care of kids and she would work. But right. It wasn't because I thought, okay, I'm a man, I don't do that. It was, I'd be terrible at that. Right. And she's wonderful with kids, and so I envisioned a somewhat of a traditional thing, but it wasn't a major value to me. I did have a big attachment to the idea of, you know, being kind of together forever as a family. I don't know how much specifics of the LDS notion of that I bought into, but in general sense, I love the idea of having a, you know, that humanity had this common origin and had this common destiny, and as a family, you'd have, you know, a destiny together beyond what was on this life. I did have a strong attachment to that.
Right. And,
so that was important, but I didn't care so much about, you know, trying to live like specific, you know, role based things that you know, a traditional Mormon lifestyle right. would subscribe.
You know, this is something I should probably save for later, but it strikes me, and I'll just say it now, that your pragmatic expectations with regard to the church and your marriage are probably an important ingredient for why you guys have been able to work through what you've worked through. That's just an observation, but we can come back to that. I just wanted to note that and maybe remind us to come back to it later. But Laurie, let's switch to you. What did you see in terms of Dan and your relationship as it related to the church when you got married?
Well, in the interim between high school and marrying him, I had done 1 year at BYU and really tried to put aside all my frustrations, and I really felt good about the church. I really jumped in. Always, I was always a little bit off from the straight-laced Mormon person. I always had those big questions. But for the most part, I just was coming back to home, coming back to feeling, integrating myself fully into the church. And so when he came home from his mission, I was getting ready to go on a mission.
Right.
And so I was kind of sidetracked. And as we got married, I found myself back at BYU. But my vision was, this is it. I'm going to give it a good shot.
Right.
Like, we're going to do the Mormon thing. I was really devoted. And I believed as I went through the temple, as I, you know, put on garments, as I did all of those things, I took it very, to be very sacred. I believed in the ordinances. And we had a lot of talks about having kids and how we wanted to raise them. And while we wanted a lot of traditional things, we really wanted not to have those gender roles. And I think, you know, moving forward with Dan and why it felt so comfortable for me was that underneath it, Dan, he has this pragmatism that is really a key part of his personality.
Mm-hmm.
But he also has this underlying kindness and gentleness. And there's doesn't seem to be a part of him that gets offended easily. Everything seems to roll off his back pretty well.
Hmm.
And so for him, we'd have conversations, and if I complained about, or I get fired up about the feminist issues, and he'd be like, he just takes it. He'd listen. He'd ask good questions, and none of it scared him off.
Right.
So that was just lovely. It was really comfortable.
Hmm.
And as we had our kids, you know, when we started having children, that's when I realized I'm going to give the traditional lifestyle a chance. Number one, I still didn't know what I really wanted to do when I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, I knew I wanted to have kids, and I felt really lucky to have the chance to have a family.
Right.
And I thought I wanted to give my kids what I had. I wanted to have somebody for them to come home to. I wanted not to be a stressed out mom. I wanted to give him that calm, happy life.
Right. So Laurie, talk to us about the steps that led to your losing, you know, your faith in the church.
Yeah, there was a couple of issues, but I started to notice that I was increasingly unhappy. And I've had periods of depression on and off, but it started to get worse after a couple of years of marriage. And through some counseling at BYU, actually, I started to pinpoint this line of perfectionism that really, it really flowed through my life and affected me.
Hmm.
And for me, it came directly from my approach to the church, and how I interpreted the teachings,
right,
and how they were presented to me in my life specifically. And over a long period of time, I simultaneously started to drop things like that, the perfectionism, started to morph out of that and started to pick up gently new perspectives and new things that weren't LDS that seemed just as true to me. So I found myself after the second baby just in a really, really deep, dark depression. And I couldn't pull out. It was really deep. And that was probably our hardest time in our marriage. It was just my answer to that unhappiness was to do more, was to read my scriptures more and to pray more and to go to the temple and to give more in my callings, all of those things. And I found that I just became more unhappy and more exhausted and more frustrated with myself. So I ended up becoming pretty desperate. I went on some, I was really into holistic remedies and they just weren't working. So I went through and got some antidepressants and started to kind of come out of the clouds a little bit. And while I was working with that, I discovered yoga practice. I'd been teaching aerobics and ended up jumping into some yoga classes as part of my certification upgrade.
Right.
And really liked it. And then I found, take these really intense classes out in Oakland at this place called Monkey Yoga Shala. If you're ever there, go see Laura Camp. She's great. But I'd go to her classes, these crazy classes, swinging around from the rafters almost. And I would notice that I wouldn't get depressed for like 3 days. I'd just go every third day. Mm. Dad and I would sit down and we'd say, hey, listen, this costs as much as the antidepressants. So right. Let's just send you to yoga.
And you stopped taking antidepressants?
I stopped taking them.
Wow.
Stopped taking them, and you know, if I would get real grumpy, Dan would look at the calendar. He'd say, "Oh, it's been 4 days," and he'd kind of put his foot to my bum and say, "Get out the door, go to yoga." Mm. So, and I'd always come back just lifted and connected and happy. Mm. So I wanted to figure out what that was, and I started reading more and studying more, and again, it was a slow shift. And for a long time, I just started interpreting the scriptures and the teachings through the church really metaphorically. And I can't really pinpoint a big change. You know, there was no disbelief at all. I felt like the yoga was teaching me more about my religion, more about my connection with God. And I had some really neat connecting experiences through that paradigm of Mormonism. That brought me deeper into Mormonism, more connected, happier, more connected, better mom. And so Dan and I never freaked out about the alternative teachings that I was learning because they were working. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, but I think Dan liked the yoga me much better than the Molly Mormon me. You know, right. I was much more fun to be around.
I never envisioned marrying a Molly Mormon. So, you know, that was, yeah, happy. You know, it was a better fit.
Now, Lori, when we were preparing for this, you mentioned a story with the shoe and the door. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was a great story. I'd love to hear it. But where did the, you know, tell that story and tell where it came and if there were any revelations with regard to the church and maybe the contrasting between yoga and the church that happened through that story.
Well, that had come. That was my turning point to being willing to look outside of the church. So I'd done all of my looking for help with this depression within the church paradigm. I'd had priesthood blessings. I'd had, you know, I'd looked into it. And I'd read books from the church bookstore about happiness. All those things. But I was still so unhappy. And my kids were bugging me. I wasn't happy being home. But I was too stressed out when I would try and work. And they couldn't find that balance. And one day, I think I had the baby and my son was five. My other son was five. And they'd done something they needed a timeout for. And I put them in the rooms. And I was just exhausted. And I said, you know, I put them in their rooms and I shut the door. And they kept talking and giggling, and they weren't doing timeout at all. They were playing. So I banged on the door with my hand and I yelled, you know, be quiet in there. I said, be quiet. And they'd be quiet for a minute, and then they'd get down and play again. And finally, I just had it. I just blew a gasket. And just screaming, you know, I told you to be quiet. And I kicked the door with my shoe, and I was wearing clogs. And my clog slipped off my foot, and I kicked it so hard that my shoe got caught in the door. And I just, it felt like, I don't know, it felt like that realization. I had to pull my shoe out of the door, and the kids were terrified. They didn't know what had happened. And I started crying, and I opened the door, and I had the baby in my arms and the five-year-old hugging me. And he was saying, I'm sorry, Mom. I'm sorry, Mommy, you know. And why are you sad? And we were all just crying in a big heap, the three of us. And I realized, you know, what I'm doing isn't working. It's not working. Mm. And you've given everything you can possibly give. And it's not working. And that's when I was finally willing to go to the doctor and finally willing to look at alternative things.
Right.
So I started really looking at all sorts of different things, and yoga was part of that. A lot of things didn't work. You know, I tried funky things that didn't work.
Right. And did you ask yourself through this why the church program wasn't working?
Yeah, I did. But throughout it, I think the most frustrating thing for me was ultimately my deepest belief was in prayer and my connection with the divine and personal revelation. So I remember being on my knees and praying, please don't make me feel this way. Please help me enjoy being around my children. Please help me not yell at everybody I love. Mm-hmm. You know, those things. And then 2 seconds later, I'd be snappy and frustrated, and I felt trapped in my life. And I felt almost scared to look outside of my church teachings, because I'd been warned so much about that in my life. You know, be mindful because there be dragons out there, right?
Right.
Only read things that come through the church. Satan will lead you astray. And the way Satan might lead you astray is that it might look really appealing and healthy, you know?
Right.
So that's where I was at. But that kept morphing into... And I'd worked in the primary for so long that I hadn't been around the adult teachings for a long time. I think it was in the primary for 9 years.
Hmm.
And so I kept just reinterpreting the scriptures and the doctrine in the way that worked for me as I became happier, as I started learning these new teachings. And that so colored my Mormon view. And so I would teach the kids through my new Mormon view. And it was almost all Christ-centered by that point.
Right.
So a few years ago, I ended up, we were in a new ward, we'd moved, and I jumped into Relief Society and Gospel Doctrine for the first time in 9 years, and I was shocked to see how far I'd come. I sat there and realized, like, you're not Mormon anymore, you know. And I felt like a non-member sitting there, and it was interesting because at that point... I had some free time on my hands. We'd had a shift in jobs. And I started to look online some of the big questions. And because I didn't have a big calling for the first time in a long time, I wasn't in a presidency anywhere, spending hours a week preparing for that. So I started looking online, you know, typing in polygamy, Mormon polygamy, those things. And my sister had loaned me this book, In Sacred Loneliness, you know, all the stories of all of Joseph's wives. And I had never realized that polygamy had started with Joseph. I always thought it was a Brigham thing.
Hmm.
And that book just broke my heart. It just broke my heart reading the stories of those women, because it blasted every excuse that I'd ever heard or every rational explanation for polygamy had been blasted open by that book. And I had always hoped that there was something redeemable in it to me. I wanted to know why it was practiced.
Right.
So when I found out it came from Joseph and started looking into that, I decided that, again, personal revelation, I needed to pray about that. And I got a really clear answer. I prayed for a couple of weeks, and my prayer was just, I tried to keep it really simple. Is polygamy sanctioned of God? Was this a revelation to Joseph? I didn't even ask, should we practice it now? Should we do this or that? And my mind was really open. I was really ready to hear, yes, it is. And I kind of expected to hear, you know, this was a revelation to Joseph.
Hmm.
I was kind of stealing myself up for that. But what I got was just, it wasn't emotional. It wasn't huge. It was a very quiet personal revelation, a quiet knowing. This phrase just came through my mind often, and it said, Joseph made a mistake.
Hmm.
Joseph made a mistake. And that somehow, because it felt like such divine message, it felt really calming to me. And I felt really relieved to finally have taken that off the shelf and learned about it.
Right.
So for me, rather than being upset, too upset by that, I mean, I was upset by the stories around it, I was also very relieved to have learned. I refused. I refused the explanation finally, refused the explanation that there were things we would have to wait for the next life to learn.
Right.
You know, I just thought, if Joseph can say a prayer, still as an adult, if Joseph can say a prayer, God can come down and talk to him. He can answer a couple simple questions for me, little me, you know? So that started it. And then I went on. And, you know, I had the role of women. Why can't we have the priesthood? I had the perfectionism issues. I had the thing that also I had learned had made me so unhappy was this constant barrage of the to-do list. And no matter how much I did, I never felt like I was doing enough, and I never felt that I was good enough, and I always felt like I would have to wait till the next life to be fully redeemed.
Hmm.
And, you know, the way that gay people were treated in the church, there was no, also this idea that our blessings were predicated on our obedience.
Right.
That was started to be blasted out for me as well, because I had been super obedient, and I wasn't getting the blessings that I needed.
Right.
And this idea that yoga had taught me was that the world is really friendly. And this idea that Satan's out to get me isn't true.
Hmm.
I just lost my testimony of Satan.
Hmm.
So that... And
by seeing the world as a good place, not as this evil, horrible place, right?
Yes, and the more I embraced it, and the more teachings I learned from the world at large, the happier I became, the more connected I felt with everybody around me. And I was just happier. So it was actually really working for me to readjust my belief system. So then when I found out about the Book of Mormon Historicity and the Book of Abraham.
What do you mean Book of Mormon Historicity?
Reading that the ancestors, that for me it was learning that the Lamanites actually had, what was it, Asian heritage?
Right.
Yeah.
DNA.
Yeah.
DNA testing.
Okay.
And I'm a big science believer. I always think that God works through science.
Right.
So that was a big red flag, and altogether they didn't add up. You know, there was this idea that God's way out there, and God's outside of us. And what I was really learning was that I am God, and I am whole, and I can be happy right now. I can be whole right now. For me, I started seeing through these things that seemed to be illusion to me.
Right.
So
I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but a lot of people sometimes like to make the assumption that people sin their way out of the church, or they, you know, they skepticize their way out of the church. But it almost sounds like you happied yourself out of the church in terms of just seeking joy, and that took you out of the church.
Yeah. But that was a really brave thing to do, to say, I'm going to seek out joy, even if it means dropping a lot of the things that I've believed for years and loved. That attachment was really hard to break. But the more I did it, the more joyful I became.
So how did you – was there ever a point where, you know, were you talking to Dan all the way along about the full implications of what this might mean? Or were you keeping this all inside yourself until one day you realized you had to have the conversation?
We had a conversation all along, and Dan's a great listener. He's really open-minded. What ended up happening as I became happier with my own self, I became more unhappy with what was going on at church. And so the more that I would complain or say, I don't like this, I'm not cool with this, I think I don't want to speak for him, but I think that Dan felt he seemed to be more defensive. So he would always be more apologetic.
Yeah.
And he's so pragmatic. He'd be like, yeah, yeah, but whatever.
Right.
You know, and I'd be like, no, it's important.
So he would downplay. He wouldn't bash with you. He would just kind of downplay it.
Yes. And if you know Dan, that he does that with everything. It's the journalistism. He always wants to be fair and balanced and really look at every angle of everything.
Right.
And I just for once wanted him to agree with me.
Right.
So well, it wasn't working out that way.
Part of the difference too is that I, you know, she wasn't, most of this stuff wasn't new to me. You know, through the mission field and after, I had heard a lot of these things. You know, I had known, again, weird from my upbringing, but I actually knew at an early age that Joseph was a polygamist. Because I, at one time, I can't remember the context, we were driving through Utah, I remember that. And I overheard some snippet of a conversation my parents were having and said something about polygamy. And I said, what's polygamy? And they said, oh, it's when one man has a bunch of wives. And a bunch of the early guys in the church did that. Joseph Smith, Brigham Young, all had a bunch of wives. And, you know, my dad's comment on that was, yeah, that's pretty weird. And that was kind of it,
right.
You know. And I was pretty young, and so I didn't really, like, you know, freak out about it. I was just kind of like, okay, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up with the baggage that, with an illusion that, you know, Joseph was removed from this, that it's funny, for some reason a lot of members have that, but, and I also didn't grow up with the notion that I had to be okay with it. I'd always been weird about it. I never, you know, I had always wondered about it and thought, okay, maybe there's a reason for it, but I didn't feel the compulsion to say, okay, I need to decide if it was true or not, you know, because I always thought in my mind, I hope it's not true. That's just too weird. It's
right.
not something I'd ever
wanted. And again, that's your pragmatic self coming in.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Dan. Can you confirm, and this will put you on the spot, but I'm going to ask you to use your scout's honor to give me the gosh honest truth. Did Lori become happier? Did she become a better mom and a better wife through sources outside the church? And do you think she really did try to find the joy and the happiness within before she just sort of gave up and had to seek elsewhere?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, pretty, you know, totally. There was no question in my mind that she was getting happier, that especially yoga was just bringing in this happiness to her life. So I never would have thought, I never saw yoga as a threat. You know, I just didn't. It just, you know, and what kind of husband would I be to say, you know, hey, I know this is making you happy, but, you know, it's kind of giving me the itch on this religious teaching. So can you pull away from that? You know, I didn't know how to do that.
Right.
I missed that class where you control your wife or something. I got donuts that Sunday, I think. Anyways, so there was no question she was happier. What I did wonder is, you know, I thought, okay, is she just not? I did wonder, was it pride somewhere? You know, that you know, because part of me was always thought, okay, there might be some tough teachings that God wants us to understand, that maybe we need to understand in humility. So when I started to hear things like, you know, language like, you know, I totally reject this, not so much about polygamy. I didn't care about polygamy. But, you know, the notion that, you know, when I was starting to realize where it was carrying to reject the entire belief of the church, I thought, okay, is this getting too far? You know, is she throwing out the baby with the bathwater? And that's what I was really wondering about. Because, you know, what was funny is she was always open with me in terms of what she was thinking through all these years. But I never, because I didn't set up a situation where she had to come to some place of like ultra orthodox belief to make it work, because that wasn't me either.
Right.
I thought I had a bar low enough that she'll come back. You know, I'm not asking that much. What I'm telling you is what I was thinking in my head. I'm like, I'm not asking that much. I'm just like, hey, the church is an okay thing. And, you know, if there's stuff that you're not comfortable with, you don't have to, you know, I didn't put this high bar on it to be that way. So I thought.
Well, and I was going to church the whole time and fulfilling callings the whole time. So, and doing all sorts of activities in the ward and with my ward friends. So,
she didn't show up one day and just go, I don't believe and I'm not going anymore. Like, boom, you know, this was this really long-term thing.
Right.
After we'd moved, I found myself not being able to sit through the adult meetings. And so I would go to sacrament and then I'd stay with our little one in the nursery. And then I'd go hang out in the car and read a book about Buddhism, you know, so that I could feel like I got something good out of those 3 hours. But just increasingly not comfortable there. And at that time, I found New Order Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been working out a lot of things. That's when I'd been mulling over so much of it. And I'd had this free time to really explore it. And I told Dan, I'm on New Order Mormon. This is my this is my avatar and my name. And I'm not doing this behind your back. Be free to read wherever I'm at. But I had been to the point where I couldn't really share all of my full experience and rejection of it with him because he was getting so defensive and I didn't want to offend his beliefs. But I didn't want it to feel like I was sneaking off to explore, you know, to have these discussions that I was being frustrated about. So,
how was New Order Mormon and online Mormonism for you? There's sometimes a perception that those fora are negative, that they, it is a bunch of whiny, bitter people complaining, and that they, you know, inch people out eventually. Is that how you experienced it, or did you experience something different?
Well, I definitely saw it that way. You know, it was definitely negative. And, you know, those things are cyclical. Those places are cyclical, those boards. So they might start out more faithful and go more anti. But there was a group on there that was really smart at the time, and I really enjoyed the intellectual conversation. It was also a great resource for me to go reading things. Now, I did all of my reading on things that I could buy at the church bookstore or things that were put out by Mormons. I didn't read any anti-Mormon literature to come to these conclusions.
Right.
I finally decided to read more about the Book of Abraham. And I was reading about the Book of Abraham and all of the problems matching it up as a direct interpretation or a direct translation.
Yeah. Right.
So that wasn't adding up for me. And I remember for the first time ever, I actually thought, you know, I'm adding it up, but I'm not getting the correct sum. It's true. And I finally, my brain went to this thought, it's not true. The church is man-made. Joseph's not a prophet. And that washed over me just like a deep realization of, oh, you know, and it hit me. And I didn't know if I could share that with Dan, but I knew there's this thing about me that I can't really hide that. Dan and I are so close. So when he came home that day, I sat him down. I was on my way to teach about an hour later, but I sat him down and I shared that with him. I said, I read this. You've got to read this stuff. I want you to read it and think about it because, man, I just decided and figured out it's not true, Dan. It's not true. And I just, and Dan should take over from here, but I was shocked with how pragmatic he is and relaxed he is about the church. That night was the first time I ever heard the word divorce. He was so, I don't know exactly what was going on inside of him, but what I got from him was shock, and he did not know what to do. And I just remember going to work that night and just bawling and trying to figure out how I was going to stop crying so I could teach this yoga class. Mm. And just trying to teach that class, getting back in the car. It was an hour drive there and back, and bawling all the way back. And that spurred off, gosh, a month, 2 months of not so great conversations, a lot of defensiveness, and a lot of tears, you know. It's a hard time.
Did you use those words, it's not true?
I think so.
So, Dan, what was that conversation like for you?
What also propagated it is, like, I think it was either that day or maybe the day before. It was funny that all this stuff kind of combined in a similar time. I'd actually started to read what she had written on New Order Mormon, and one of her posts where she basically said outright, I don't believe that, like, that is where it hit me. And I was at work when I did this. I was on a lunch break, and I thought, and I was just, this thing dropped in the pit of my stomach. I'm like, has it gone that far? You know, or am I misunderstanding this? And so I kind of,
Dan, real quick. Yeah. Were you a one true church kind of guy? Like, this is, you know, exclusive priesthood authority, only true church on the earth? Because on the one hand, you describe yourself as very pragmatic and not taking everything too seriously. But it sounds like at the core, you still had the one true church, only true church mindset. Is that right?
There was, to be totally honest, what I have is these... I kind of have a split personality, I think.
So you're compartmentalized.
Kind of. There's a part of me that idea really appealed to. There's this part of me that's very ordered, and, you know, tries to be disciplined. And to that part of me, this notion that, yeah, God would have one way because all these other ways would be like a big mess. So God would have this one way, and the LDS Church has this, you know, story about it that seems to work, even if, you know, even if I may have questions about some things or that. So I kind of can't consider myself a big picture Mormon, but there was a part of me that idea really appealed to.
Okay.
There was another part of me that it didn't, that it made me uncomfortable. And when I was on my mission, there were several times where people would ask and say, and you maybe had this too when you served a mission, but people would say, so what you're saying is that if you're not a Mormon, you're not going to go to heaven or the ultimate heaven or whatever. And, you know, what they were saying was technically true by our doctrine, but it made me uncomfortable to say that and believe that because I thought, really? You know, so I kind of had both going in me.
Right. Okay. But, okay.
Yeah.
So take us back when she broke the news.
Sure. Well, when she broke the news, what happened is that ordered part of me, like, you know, awoke from hibernation. Like, oh, whoa. This can't be happening. And to put it in total fairness, I never, I may have projected this image to her at the time, but I never remember thinking, I have to divorce her to save my internal salvation. I never thought that. What I did think was, you know, in the story that we've told you about our marriage and all the struggles that Laurie had with depression, is we were these very close people, but we're also very different people. And so our marriage has been a lot of struggles, too, a lot of ups and downs trying to get together, and we had, you know, we had, you know, we'd had a lot of tough times leading up to this that had nothing to do with the church even. And so what I remember thinking very clearly was, is this, would this be the final straw? You know, is this, you know, on top of the other struggles we have, can we get through this now?
Right.
And the other thing is that I had in my mind, I think, a certain image of a disaffected Mormon.
Right.
Because I hadn't really hung out much on the LDS internet, but as I knew Laurie was looking at places, I poked around. I looked at New Order Mormon. I thought it was, I didn't think it was anything bad or anything. I think the people there were honest and trying to struggle, but I checked out other sites too that were far, far more negative. And I had this, and that and other experiences, I kind of had a certain image that when somebody falls away from the church, they become these nasty, oh, I hate the church, it ruined my life. You know, this is a simplistic view. It's not fair at all, but that's kind of what I was thinking. And what I was thinking is I couldn't stay married to somebody like that.
Right.
That, and I had this, I started projecting all these fears in my image of what she was and was becoming, that she wasn't really projecting in total fairness, but that's what I was seeing. And so in those initial days, the shock value, the shock that was happening to me and the things I was communicating and what I was seeing, that's what was kind of going on, really.
So how did you guys, Dan, how did you, you know, how did you guys start working through this big difference? And over what period of time? And, you know, how did you handle the aftermath of the shock and awe?
Well, you know, it had to go through, we went through, I remember, a few very tough conversations that just left me raw.
What were they like?
They wouldn't progress anywhere. They would devolve into what I interpreted as her attacking the church, and I was trying to defend things.
So, Laurie, what would you say?
You know.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
No, like, would you bring up, would you try and say, well, look at the Book of Abraham, and look at the Book of Mormon, and look at DNA, and look at polyandry, and did you know about blah, blah, blah?
I was very careful and calculated because I knew how I felt, you know, 6 months ago, that those things are all really dear to me.
Right.
So, but he's a reporter. He looks at all sorts of things from other angles. He's liberal. He's open-minded.
Right.
And we always had this, you know, that shared kind of we do the church in our own way thing. And I've always shared everything with him and been able to talk, you know, open and honest. And he's always accepted me the way I am. So to not be able to have conversations with him was really hard. And I would just kind of gently ask him questions. And then that's my memory. Gently or directly ask him questions, you know. So questions like, so you're okay with polygamy then? You know, gently, yeah, sweetly ask you that question.
That's very gentle.
But, and you know what, and it was frustrating because I thought, well, is he only okay with it because he's a man?
Right.
But then he would say, you know, well, they're not perfect. You know, prophets aren't perfect. I'm like, yeah, but it just becomes so problematic. If everything they do is off, how can you even trust any of the revelations they've had? And, you know, I'm trusting these people to lead me to God, and all I've had is proof that they're not leading me to what's divine. So, it was hard because we couldn't communicate honestly at that point.
Hmm. Gotcha.
So at that point,
one thing I remember clearly too is that a couple key things happened to me personally that helped, I think, at least from my standpoint, start to break through the logjam. Is that I remember after one particular conversation, she had actually threw out the idea that maybe she should have her name removed from the church records. And that one, this was like, you know, a couple months into having these kind of conversations. But it was another hit to me because I think what I'd been holding on to was like, okay, maybe, even though she doesn't believe, maybe she'll find a way to maintain a positive relationship somehow right. with the church. And that's, so I start, that started to be my new bar, you know, to say, okay, if she doesn't believe and she doesn't want to fully like go all the time in that, I don't want to force her to go, but maybe she'll find a way to have some positive relationship somehow, you know, go to a homemaking once a year or whatever. I don't know. But I mean, it was like, I felt I needed her to have some sort of relationship. So when she voiced that, it was the final blow to me to like, okay, what exactly am I trying to hang on to here? And I remember taking some time just by myself after that conversation, and I really started praying, and I'm not a person that prays a lot, really. Mm-hmm. And I was just, it was one of those things where I just let go of everything. Any notion that I had of where I thought things were going to go. And it was like, I kind of put it as me surrendering to whatever, you know, like I said, I'm not the kind of person that seeks God's approval or disapproval or direction on everything I do. But in this particular moment, I felt I was. I was like, what do I do? What's the play here? I was really lost for a moment, and I had this enormously comforting feeling come over me at the time. And what was really interesting about it is, it wasn't like a feeling or a voice that said, it was a feeling or voice that said, it's going to be okay. It was a very comforting feeling, but it wasn't something that it's going to be okay. I'm going to straighten her out. You know, like I didn't have that kind of feeling like, okay, I can be okay. She'll straighten out eventually. It was, you'll be okay. I can totally accept this situation now. I felt like at that moment, you know, it's going to be okay. I can do this. You know, I can do this with the way she is right now. And that helped me a lot to be able to say, I can accept it. You know, I can accept it. I can find a way to live with it. And again, after pretty soon after this, I remember after some of our conversations, I remember looking in the mirror at myself, and I never liked apologetics, that kind of approach. When I was at BYU, I remember reading some stuff on farms and everything, because I had some questions about things like the priesthood ban for blacks in the priesthood and some other things that always bothered me. And I just didn't like that approach of trying to obfuscate and say, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's not this, and not really giving clear answers. And I felt I felt that's what I was becoming. You know, in these conversations with her, I was straining at whatever I had to defend because I felt I had to defend it somehow. And that wasn't me. You know, I'd always felt I was able to take, to understand that the church was a humanistic organization that had, you know, flaws in its history and everything else. And I'd been able to deal with that. And I was turning into a different person, and I didn't want to be that person. I didn't want to be somebody who couldn't accept those things and felt I had to make reasons for everything. So, you know, these experiences told me to kind of pull out of the cycle that we were getting ourselves into.
And I think that cycle was that deep down underneath it all, I hoped that he would come to the same conclusions that I did.
Right.
And deep down, he hoped that I would figure it out and go back to where I was in the church. So I think the turning point for us in healing was to both recognize, to both accept each other right where we were, that maybe this is it, you know? But, and at that point, we started to go through counseling.
But did you try, Laurie? I mean, you mentioned the questions you'd ask him, but I can imagine myself trying to deconvert my spouse, like just having this hope. If I could just share with them the right information, get them to read the right book, have them talk to the right person, I can get them to see that this thing isn't what it claims to be, and then we'll be on the same page. Did you ever have that impulse? Did you ever try that?
Oh, gosh, I wish, but I knew I knew that if I did that, it would backfire. You know, the more I throw things right in his face, the more rough conversations we would have. And he would tend to retreat anyway instead of sit down and talk about it. And I would get frustrated that he wouldn't talk about it.
Right.
And I was really frustrated that he's such a smart guy, and yet he wouldn't read these books. And it was twofold, because I was now speaking a new language. I was speaking a language of yoga and Buddhism, and a lot of my explanations were in terminology that, you know, most Mormons don't even know what the words mean. And so it was very hard for me to explain fully, because a lot of that growing had been internal for me. So it was very hard for me to find the words to explain where I was at.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.